everyone. It's another episode of the Z2 Podcast. And me and Zach are wearing the same freaking shirt.
You know, you just commented that this is an audio podcast.
I know, but you made it such a clear point about it. And if they're following our Facebook page, Z2 Podcast, on Facebook, then you could see the mini video of us wearing the same goddamn shirt.
And it's adorable.
And so this is episode 9. Actually, episode 9 this week. And we have Steven back joining us.
I'm back.
Hello, Steven. Nice to have you back again. It's always fun to have three people on the podcast, I feel.
Yeah, that's really great. It makes it open for conversation.
Yeah, we get that third perspective. But anyway, I wanted to start off with this interesting little article I found on like Monday or something. There's a comic book called This One's, or not comic book, graphic novel, comic book, same thing, I guess. Called This One's Summer, that was removed from a public library in Minnesota after one complaint, which kind of begs the comment on this article is, where is it? The graphic novel was purchased for the school library based on reviews and awards, but a comment was made during our phone conversations that if the book had been seen prior to purchasing, it wouldn't have been purchased. The person I spoke to said they wouldn't want their child to read the book and agreed with the complaining parent that no child, regardless of age or grade, should be able to read the book. Which, that's kind of some, I feel like some bullshit right there. Like, oh, one person complained, therefore nobody gets to read this. And apparently this, I hadn't heard about this book, but it won a Caldecott Honor Award, which is the first graphic novel to attain such a thing.
So what's the actual content behind this book?
It is a coming-of-age story who centers around a child named Rose, who's on the brink of adolescence, as she vacations with her family at a summer lake cottage. There, she becomes fascinated with the lives of local teens, one of whom is pregnant. While dealing with tensions in her own family with her younger friend Wendy, the book contains some crude language and blunt talk about sex.
And this is at a middle school that they removed it
from? Did it say middle school? No, it was from a public library that was removed from.
So the thing is, though,
which serves grades kindergarten through 12.
See, what I don't understand, if it's a public library, it's a public library. Mm-hmm. I mean, if anything, you could put it like on a more restricted section, maybe.
Right.
But, you know, coming from the teacher background, the whole, we celebrate banned books, we celebrate these mature themes, and, you know, there are proven research studies that state that letting your children interact with some of these higher level texts, some of these more mature texts, is better off for them, because then they're, you know, not wide-eyed Bambi into the world. Just, it's something that you should be exposed to at a younger age. Mm-hmm. Just because,
and I agree,
yeah,
it is. I think the bigger issue with this whole thing is one parent got upset by it, therefore we're just taking it out. Like, no other discussion.
It's one parent's belief that they don't want this book, so everyone can't read it now.
What, and I think another big thing that's wrong with this whole thing is, like, this is a very, like, relevant book to this, like, time. Yeah. And just, like, I'm sure, like, some young person reading this book could relate to it in some way. So it just, it seems like, and especially...
Wait. You're telling me that novels, graphic novels, any form of literary text relates to the average person's life?
Just doesn't add up.
What a concept.
1 + 1 = 2.
It's like knowledge is power or something.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of graphic novels out right now that serve that same meaning, that, you know, they're trying to bring up these relevant issues in a way that can encapsulate anyone, regardless of age, gender, and maturity level. And I feel like it's a really good thing to have, especially just so that people can interact with the text, and it creates this ongoing conversation. But with, you know, one parent complaining about something, that's really bizarre to me.
Yeah, and just to get more details about that, the Henning School policy has no, or the Henning School has no policy, and a very informal procedure. Complaints go to the school principal, and the principal decides what to do without being required to consult with professionals or even read the book. So that makes this even more great. Luckily, the American Library Association's Intellectual Freedom blog is the one who reported about this, and they're apparently trying to ask why or reconsider having the book reinstated.
Shout out to censorship.
Yeah, like, I feel that's definitely what this this is a big issue with this, is the whole censorship thing. Like, just because you don't like it doesn't mean that it shouldn't exist. Like, that's just not right.
Yeah, and I think that's a very common debate now, especially just, I feel like more mature books and more mature things are coming out, you know. Something like The Hunger Games, which was broadcasted to teenagers. It's a young adult book. And, you know, everyone's read that book. Except if you do, like, two read-throughs, you realize, oh, cool, it's this nice action book with all these cool characters. And the second read-through, it's like, this is really political. This is really messed up. So what's the difference between something like The Hunger Games, which is just uber violence in politics, versus something that actually really encapsulates human life? And is it just because it's like, oh, this is dystopian universe, this will never happen? But it does.
I guarantee you the issue that this parent had is probably just the fact that it talks about sex. Yeah, I guarantee that's the issue.
The teenage pregnancy, and it's like, I don't want my child exposed.
Even though
to
they're so culturally relevant right now.
Right, things
now.
Like that get censored out of these libraries, but things like Twilight stay in there, where there is sex, there is birth, there is all of this.
Yeah.
Shout out to Breaking Dawn.
Again, talk to your goddamn kids. Yeah. Just, if you don't want them to reading this, okay, that's fine, but don't take it away from other people who might actually, like, enjoy this.
Yeah, and if you're not comfortable with talking about it, get another adult who is comfortable and have them explain it. Like, look, this is a thing, but don't let it affect you.
Or, since it's one child and one specific parent...
Yeah, just don't let them read it.
Or just find a middle ground. I mean, hey, this book is very mature. We will put this little paper band around it before it gets checked out to anyone. Your legal parent and or guardian must sign this to say that you can read it. I mean, that's like super drastic, but it still keeps that text in a public place where someone can read it.
Right.
And you know that kid probably is just going to go down the street to Barnes & Noble and read it anyways.
If they really want to read it, they're going to probably find a way to read it.
Yeah. Either that or the internet.
Yeah, I'm sure there's some scan of it.
Love finds a way, guys. And love of books is the most important love there is.
Yeah. Life finds a way. Right.
As always. Yeah, but it's always interesting to see these, like, censorship things that still occur, like... What people just still want to ban books just because they don't believe the thing that's in their voice.
We celebrate Banned Books Week in March every year,
which I think is fantastic. Yeah. And I always like reading through the list of like which stuff got banned. It's like, oh, I've read that.
Yeah, and you know, it's always not necessarily fun, but it's always really cool to see people unite to this cause. On a consistent basis. It's like, you know what, we want these books to be read. We want these books without the parts cut out. Like, again, there's abridged text, but you lose a lot of meaning if you read the abridged versions. And I mean, the most common and overdone one is Huckleberry Finn. And it's like, yeah, you can read the book without the N-word, but
that
on a
it's
literary
so culturally
note,
relevant to that
yeah,
time.
On a literary note, you need it because taking like a historicism approach, a literary text is a living body. If you remove a word, if you change anything, it destroys that body. It creates something that is not organic to the ongoing conversation of literature and of intellects.
Yeah, exactly. Like, just acknowledge that, especially for like a historical text, like, yes, these events happened or this stuff happens, but don't try to like just beat around the bush around and like make it like, oh, we can, is it okay to still read about this? Like, yes, it is. It was part of that time. So it's important.
Yeah. It's again, parents need to talk to their children. Like, all right, you're going to read this book. You're going to see some certain language in there. Just know, we don't use that anymore, but at the time, it was the culture.
Yeah, exactly. And, yeah, that's kind of what I want to talk about that. Yeah. So, moving on, this is something that I know Steven can definitely talk about. Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah.
For someone who has not read the books, which is me, I've been really liking this season so far. Like, season 5 was kind of just... I didn't really enjoy much of it, but so far I'm really digging what they're going with it.
And as someone who has read the books, I stopped watching at season 5, picked it up this season, because they even said they're not going to really do anything that spoils the next book. So I like to think of this as a what-if story. Like, all right, what if this character died, or what if this person did this other thing? Like, we can see how that would
affect. So is it like the diverging timelines in a Full Metal Alchemist? Just for
it, yeah, just that... that's kind of a way to look at it. Like, yeah. They caught up to the source material, so now they're like, well, let's just create our own storyline of what we've gone on.
Right. And there are certain things that are still following the book, like Arya's storyline, mm-hmm. still following the book. Bran's.
I like what they're doing with him, though. Especially, like, everyone's like, oh, it'd be so cool to have, like, a series of, like, all the flashback stuff with, like, the revolution and everything. And that's cool to, like, see all that.
Yeah, getting little tidbits through the eyes of the Starks.
Mm-hmm. Especially this last episode, or episode 2.
Yeah.
Like, so Bran can literally see through time.
Yeah, he's reliving the Starks' past. Yeah, like, so specifically his father.
There's a person, a mystical man... in essentially the roots of the world, who
he's seen everything
through the trees of what they call the old gods. He's seen every single event of history for the past some odd 1,000 years, and now he's training Bran to take over for him.
Mm-hmm.
The Giver,
pretty
kind of watch
more
Game
or less.
It's
a good way to think about it, though.
He is essentially the Giver, and Bran is his protege.
Yeah, and one of my favorite things that they've done so far with this is they show this very important, like, story that Bran was told as a child, and it shows, like, oh, that's not really what happened. Yeah, My father would have died.
Yeah, he was told he was his father was the best knight. He finished all these battles, and it turns out, not really. It's one of those, you know, the history is told by the victor, and he could tell, you know, I was the best knight, I disarmed this guy, and I won, but in reality, he got lucky.
Yeah, he got saved by, like, just one of his comrades was still just breathing and just happened to get up and stab a knife in the guy's neck.
I'm interested to see what they do with this Sean Bean cameo that they're promising.
I mean, they're already getting up to that point. Like, it was, like, child to teenager. Like, I couldn't tell if that was, like... I want to say that was, like, at the end of the revolution, like, after King was dead.
It was after the Mad King. It was after the Battle of the Trident.
Which kind of sucks, because it would have been cool to see all that.
Yeah,
but...
that would have been fantastic to see, but I think they might show that later.
I think there's still talks of a spin-off series with all that, but we'll have to see.
So we're not going to see my Game of Thrones knowledge is I watched the first 3 seasons and read Wikipedia articles afterwards, and so we're not going to see the Targaryen... get rescued from the Mad King thing?
Probably not on the show.
No.
Okay.
If this spin-off series that they keep talking about actually does happen, I imagine that's something we see.
I think it'll show, like, the descent of the Mad King into essentially madness.
Yeah.
And then what led up to the revolution.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Like, see Robert and Ned's rebellion.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, from what I've heard in other interviews, they have maybe... 2 seasons left of Game of Thrones that they have planned for
it. I think they said it was like,
well, they said
it was
they were
going to
try for
10 short seasons
in total, but they're probably going to wrap up after 7.
Yeah, that's what they said. Like, their plans are as of now, they've said that, we have like about 13 episodes left of stuff after this season, so probably 2 short seasons.
And that's a good thing that they're actually ending it before it's like, all right, we gotta figure something out.
Right, and then the books hopefully will finally come out, and then people
will
be like,
George R. R. Martin released another chapter this week.
That doesn't say much when the book's like 1,200 pages.
Yeah, they're saying in theory it'll be out, like, the big rumor right now is the end of this month.
But the book will be out?
Yes.
What? Mm-hmm. I don't believe that.
Okay, well, here's the thing.
I don't believe that.
His deadline... last year was December.
Right.
And the turnaround from him finishing the book to editing to release was December to January. That was the turnaround. So if that plan is consistent through whatever publisher he's going with, I can imagine that it'd just be like an overhaul. We need to mass produce these books.
Well, and before the season even started, the producer or the publisher even said, you know, our main goal is to have it out by at least mid-season 6.
So,
which we're approaching mid-season 6 in the next couple
weeks. 2 weeks away or something.
But
not counting this week.
Yeah, and I'm really looking forward to it. I want to see how the show and the book contrast, because again, they have similar storylines going on right now, then totally different ones. Jon and Bran.
Yeah.
All of that is
well, the whole Bran, yeah, the Bran storyline is completely brand new, because in the books, everyone's told me, like, yeah, his storyline's done after he gets to the tree.
Well, and yeah, the Stannis storyline is different in season 5. Theon's storyline is completely different because of the Stannis storyline. And it's just interesting to see how they're going to try and meld all of this together.
Mm-hmm. It was Jon Snow revived in the books, or is that brand new stuff?
What happened at the end of season 5 was the end of book 5.
Okay. So this
is all brand new stuff. This could be what happens in the book.
Or just completely diverge. Or it
could be completely
like he's just different. dead.
Yeah, that's it. And
like I said, I've only mentioned this in passing, but I'm just curious to see more of what's Game of Thrones. Like, you know, they have really good world building. They have tons of history, but I really want to know about the whole idea of fabled magic. We've seen one character be revived. We've seen one character turn into a White Walker. We've seen one character come back as Lady insert spoiler here. And, you know, I just want to see more. Like, I've seen... who is it? Who are the people that flay people alive? Is that a great choice?
The Boltons.
Yeah. So, like, they're, like, secretly a vampire race or something. That's, like, one of the big fan theories. And the reason why they flay people is so the guy can just pop the skin back on. So... It seems like a really out there
far-fetched theory, just because they've even stated that they flay people as a sign of power, and then they put up the flayed men as
symbols. Ramsay, who's just a sick fuck,
yeah, who's just a demented asshole.
God, but that scene in episode 2 where I should not be surprised by this, but it still just happened.
And as far as the magic aspect goes, there's only really one.
It's like two,
one
aspects.
And a half that believe in the actual aspect of magic.
And but we've seen it.
We've seen it, but only from the religion that believes in the magic.
Okay, and that's Melisandre.
Yeah, the Lord of Light.
Yeah, the Lord of Light and the Lord of Darkness, which the Lord of Darkness is the White Walkers, essentially.
Okay. Which makes sense, since they can also bring people back to life, just in different ways.
Yeah, and then there's the old gods and new gods, but they don't really intervene. They're just kind of figureheads.
Okay. Like I said, I was captivated by this series. I enjoyed the show a little more than I enjoyed the books as I was reading
it. That's kind of why I just watch the show.
I don't know. Once something happens that actually sparks my interest, I might go back. And that's what happened with me in Breaking Bad. Like, Breaking Bad season 5 came out and something happened. I'm like, okay, I'm going to have to watch this entire show now. So I'm just kind of waiting.
Season 4 was my favorite season.
Yeah.
And then season 5 was just kind of at the end was like, okay, so all these things happened.
And my recommendation is, what I did, I watched the first 4 seasons and then went back and read the books, and that made it a lot more enjoyable, because you can make a picture of, all right, this is happening here, but then they go into more detail about it. So it's kind of, you have the similarities, but you also get some more background.
Okay.
Right. But yeah, I'm looking forward to tonight's episode, especially,
especially after that last line that
they
dropped it on.
My watch has ended.
Chill.
It's like, Jon Snow dropping the mic. I love how everybody's just like, wait, what? Where's he going?
Yeah, what?
Like, even his friend is like, wait, what do you mean I'm in control? Like,
yeah, I don't want the coat.
No, don't do this. Maybe he does know something. Or maybe he
won't. Knows the value of death.
He truly knows nothing then.
Shout out to Wikipedia articles.
Right, so, jumping back into comics news, probably the best news you got all week. Booster Gold movie confirmed. By the writer and Greg Berlanti.
Michael Carter is the greatest Green Lantern in the world, and I can't wait to see him on the big screen.
Shout out to all of you who get that reference.
You know, I truly enjoy Booster Gold. Dan Jurgens and Geoff Johns have created such an amazing hero who will never be remembered. And that's the best thing about him, is that he has the legacy of not being someone who goes down in history as a legend
right.
of tomorrow.
Like, I mean, but, yeah.
I'm really excited, and I'm actually kind of curious what Berlanti is going to do with that kind of character, because, mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of the CW, a lot of Berlanti production shows are kind of on and off for me. I love Flash. Arrow's kind of gone. I don't know where Arrow is. Legends is all right. Supergirl's all right. And then Blindspot's freaking awesome. I love that show. And it's like, where is this going to fall? Is it going to fall into like the realistic superhero of the DCEU? Or is it going to be like...
I don't know, because he deals with time travel so much. It's kind of hard to try and ground that.
Yeah, and I think the best way for them to do a Booster Gold story is if to do something pretty much brand new, because it's hard to include this character whose main focus is to go back and forth through time. Mm-hmm. And they have the writer from X-Men First Class doing which is pretty awesome, but it's like all the storylines that I love involve that idea of time travel. I loved New 52 pickup. I loved the whole let's go rescue Ted Kord. 52 is by far my favorite thing I've ever read from DC. But again, it deals with a lot of this. We know who this character is. We know his limits. Let's go try and understand him more. And what I'm afraid of is that we're going to get an origin story movie where he's superstar football player. Yeah. Booster Gold for Gotham University, and then one day he's a janitor because he's betting money, and it's like, come on.
I have two quotes, one from Berlanti that says, I'm attached to a few films at Warner Brothers now, and one, Booster Gold is a DC property. Berlanti says, Zach Stentz, who wrote an episode of Flash last year, just got the job, so he's writing the script now. I'd probably direct that, or I'd want to. And then Jeff Johns also... earlier this year, he said, we'll see Booster Gold very soon. And there's actually a lot of plans for Booster Gold. One of my favorite characters. But yeah, Booster Gold fans, you'll definitely be happy with what we got coming in the years ahead.
Yeah.
So this movie's probably easily a couple of years off.
Yeah. But and I mean, it's already...
should be happening.
Yeah, it's already gotten a lot of traction. And just having, Chief Creative Officer come out and say, look, we're very attached to this film already, and he's one of the guys that wrote him for a while, so he's already attached to the character. Mm-hmm. He's one of those people that's gonna be like, I want to make this movie the best thing possible for the fans and for myself.
Yeah, he wants to see that blue and gold relationship just thrive on screen.
I really hope it's very much the Nathan Fillion, Alan Tudyk.
I really hope so too, because that would just be excellent.
Yeah. It'd just be enjoyable. I mean, those two together would create the nice Keith Giffen buddy cop. Just everything that Booster Gold and Blue Beetle is.
Mm-hmm. Well, Nathan Fillion is free now.
Yeah. Both of them. I think pretty sure both of them are available. I don't think Alan Tudyk's doing.
He's in that new DC TV show, actually.
Oh, yeah. Powerless?
Yeah.
The sitcom? Oh, okay. Not sitcom, but comedy.
Yeah, the... Office-esque DC show starring Red Fox. She's been in a lot of the promotional stuff. Sorry.
I know nothing about
C-list it. C-list characters.
Since he's already on a DC property, I don't see why they wouldn't, hey, how about you maybe work on this if you want to?
I mean, it doesn't sound like it's tied to any universe, right. So I don't see why he couldn't work on both.
Yeah.
But, yeah, keeping with the kind of Berlanti news, it was confirmed this week that Supergirl is getting a second season, but it's going to be on CW this time, which some people are kind of worried that that's going to affect the show because of a lower budget.
Well, not just the lower budget. I can see it affecting the show where they might go away from the kind of happy-go-lucky style on some of the episodes to the more darker Arrow grit.
Is that why the lights are never on in any of the CW shows? Like, Arrow always films at night. Yeah, Flash has things in the dark happen. They just can't afford lighting at that point.
Can't afford lighting or lots busy at the time.
Who knows? I don't know why they always do. Maybe just to add. Maybe they just like that lighting of just lamps and stuff.
Dark and mysterious.
But, with Supergirl, I mean, Flash and Legends of Tomorrow use a lot of their CGI budget really well. So it doesn't make me worry about how they're going to showcase Supergirl's powers. But what I worry about is, okay, they're probably not going to bring Martian Manhunter back because, man, let me tell you, having him in that form for an entire episode right. would cost so much money.
Yeah, I think that's like, is it going to diminish the show's actual like stories that they can actually do and or at least do well? Like, I still need to go back and watch some of the episodes. Like, I really want to watch the Girl Who Has Everything one, just because that's a classic Superman storyline.
Black Mercy.
Yep, and or even just the Red Kryptonite one, since that seemed, I heard that was a really good episode as well. You know, she's kind of a dick.
So cheesy. It's it kind of borders on, like, is this good or is this just funny?
Yeah, like, I saw the little clips that they put before the Flash episode, and it's like, I might want to go watch that. It's right. It's like, it could be fun.
I'm trying to see.
And what could happen now that they have that contract between the two shows is like, all right, let's dimension hop a little more. Let's have Supergirl appear in Legends or have Supergirl appear in some other property.
Or Flash. Come into his universe.
Yeah, I just hope they don't essentially compromise the tone of the show. Because like the Flash episode where they had Barry go into the Supergirl universe, that was a lot more lighter, happy Barry, you know, more of a smart aleck instead of the emotional one we have right now.
Well, he was on a good note. He's like, yeah, attacking on particles. These Woo! Things are great.
Yeah. I mean, that's also one of my worries is Supergirl's like, they pretty much like try to define her as, yes, she has her own issues, but she is this upbeat character. Yeah. Like she is kind of almost the happy go lucky, but that's kind of that's what I like about Supergirl is she's this happy character. Like, yeah, I have powers. This is awesome. Like, I'm going to go do stuff. Like, especially in that pilot episode of her just like, yeah, I can do the good things. Like, this is awesome.
I'm going to be a hero. I'm not going to hide my powers anymore.
Yeah, like, I don't want to hide anymore. I want to be this.
Yeah.
So, we'll see. We'll see how it goes, I guess. I still need to finish watching the show and see if I actually get into it or not. At least those few episodes.
Since they're putting it on the CW, do you think they'll have Tom Welling as Superman?
That's a good question. I don't think they will. It'd be kind of cool, maybe just like have a mentor episode again. But
did you guys watch Legends this
week? I haven't watched Legends. I have it on
my DVR.
I haven't watched Legends past episode 3.
A big plot event happened, really good characterization happened, and basically, just continuing your CW news, Wentworth Miller is no longer a regular on Legends.
Right, does that mean
tomorrow.
He's going to go back to Flash?
He is a regular, the way the article worded it, he is a regular of the DC universe, so he's able to appear in
anywhere.
The properties, so that would be really cool to see. Okay, Captain Cold's in not in Central City, that's where he normally is, but Captain Cold is in Star City, where Captain Cold appears back for an episode of Legends, but, you know, it's going to be hard to reconcile how he gets reintroduced after what happened in Legends, and I'm trying to be as vague as possible for the two of you, but
I don't know.
I'm really hoping is that for a Flash Season 3, we're done with the speedster villains. Let's do a Rogue War.
That'd be great.
Get the whole Rogue
Gallery. Actually get the Rogues Gallery together.
Well, Mirror Master.
Yeah, they haven't
even used that, but just have the Rogues go at each other for the conflicting ideals because, you know, the Captain Cold that we have come to know and love in Flash and Legends is much more like, I want to be a good person and I'm going to try my hardest to be that good person while benefiting myself.
Right.
Versus, you know, Mick, who's just like, ha, burn. I'm gonna
I like
steal
fire.
Yeah. Although he did kind of have that revelation, too, of wanting to be a better person.
Yeah.
In their whole meeting their former selves.
Yeah. I'm really curious to see what season 2 of Legends is going to be, too. Also, because they said, yeah, we're going to have a rotating cast. And apparently the viewers hate the Hawks and Vandal Savage. So, and it's like, I hoped for a lot with the Hawks just because I love the DCAU version of them. Well, mostly Shiera, but they've like tied her down. It's like, yeah, this character needs to always be with a man to have any importance.
They made her so focused on Carter that it kind of took away from her character development.
Right.
Like, I'm past him. Oh, wait, no, I'm not. I'm past him. No, I'm not.
Oh, man, look, a past version of him.
Oh, look, a past version of me. Let's talk about Carter.
Yeah, I think it's one of my issues I've had with the show, and I just haven't really gotten around to watching it. Like, it has such potential. It's like, oh, we're going to jump through all these different decades. Like,
yeah.
And just seems like it's like, okay, it's, so stuff happens. Somebody has a lie again. It's the CW effect again.
Well, you learn that there's a lot more happening in the background where, you know, a lot of the show is like, well, why don't they just go back to, like, when Vandal Savage is an infant and kill him? And it's like, you learn that the Time Council is secretly kind of working for him in some fashion. And, and you know, not only are they hunting down the Wave Rider, but they're also supporting Vandal in the meantime.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Maybe I'll try and get... Didn't it just end, too, so...
I think that's like two
episodes. Yeah, I think it's going to end when Flash and Arrow seasons.
I'm also wondering if Kitty Lotz is going to show back up on Arrow again. Like that one promo I saw.
They might was, just kind of have...
Was that... Hint. Did that... They deal with that?
That was not Kitty Lotz.
It wasn't?
No.
Oh, was that the imposter?
It was an imposter.
That just happened to look exactly like Kitty Lotz.
Yeah, it's one of those episodes. It's like, yes, I'm going to take my revenge on insert thing here. Mm. I don't know. I've missed Arrow for like the past 2 weeks.
So I haven't watched
it. The last one I watched was The Imposter.
Let's all talk at the same time.
Woo!
Yeah.
Yeah. So another TV related news. ABC did decide to cancel Agent Carter, which kind of sucks. But and already immediately Tara Butters already encouraged fans to show support for the show, and there's already a hashtag of her new Agent Carter and a petition going.
Last I checked, the petition was at 21,000.
Yeah, so and they want Netflix to pick it up, which I don't see why they wouldn't. But
if they do pick it up, it'll probably be one of their back burner projects because
they have like five now or something.
Well,
for
it
Marvel.
Seems like they can just have another team work on it. I understand that the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. team works on Agent Carter during the off seasons. I think it is. It's like different writers.
I thought they ran at the same time though.
Do they?
Originally, season one of Agent Carter was the mid-season show between Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and then they just kind of like, all right, we're going to make this a regular season thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I don't know. I really think that keeping, again, it's more of those demographic things. You know, you want to see more heroes be other things other than white male or Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I'm more invested in how Peggy founded S.H.I.E.L.D. Mm-hmm. and the whole espionage thing than I actually am with the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show, because I don't know. I don't even know what's happening anymore.
It's something about Inhumans.
Yeah, so they're focusing a lot on the Inhumans now, which it looks like it's picking up, but I'm so far behind, like, I'm gonna just wait for the season to be over.
Everything I always see of it just always looks really cheesy to me, too. Like, especially in the ads and all the Marvel comics of just, like, pictures. I'm just like, that just doesn't look very good.
And the last
this looks
thing,
really low budget to me.
Yeah, the last big thing I saw from it was them essentially setting up the Marvel's Most Wanted show they're doing.
Which already got canned.
Wow. Yeah,
which sucks, because Mockingbird's a cool character. Yeah.
And, you know, from what I understand, Mockingbird and former husband of Mockingbird, those are the two characters for Most Wanted.
Yeah.
They did something during Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. that was like, you know, we'll lead everyone away. It's on you guys. And it's like, okay, so we can get these characters back, but how are you going to write them back in after you put them on the bus already?
Right.
And I honestly don't think they will write them back in just because of how that whole scenario wrapped up. I saw the scene and it was, you know, one of those emotional goodbye scenes where I don't think they're planning on bringing these characters back into the fold.
If anything, they should just put them... I don't know. One of the things that kind of gripes me, and I think it's just the MCU in general that we always talk about, is that, you know, the Avenger movies serve as the highlight. These are the episodes and everything else is a standalone story. There's no way to reconcile everything in plot so that it's relevant to the readers. I mean, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. kind of did that a little bit with Civil War, or with Winter Soldier. It's like, let's help Nick Fury by getting the last helicarrier hidden in Mount Rushmore or something. Maybe I'm getting that confused with something else. Everyone has a secret base in Mount Rushmore.
I don't follow
But, you know, even the Russo brothers came out and said, it's like, yeah, we don't watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., so we don't know what's happening, so we kind of stayed away from all of that stuff while writing Captain America.
Right.
Well, and that's, you know, S.H.I.E.L.D., they kind of try and do the same thing where they do their own little side things, but they don't have it in affect the MCU really at all.
Right.
Like, the only tie-in that I know of from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. to the MCU is before Age of Ultron, where, or the beginning of Age of Ultron, where they're going to storm the Hydra base. They essentially set that up on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Like, we found where Hydra's hiding, they have the staff there, and then that ended the episode. And then when they picked up, it was after the events of Sokovia.
Right. So just here's some of the quotes that CBR decided to include in the petition article is, Agent Carter is one of the only solely female-based shows on the air of the superhero variety. Another one writes, Peggy Carter is such an amazing character with lines such as, I know my own worth, she's an exemplary role model. By cutting Agent Carter, ABC is only adding stigma that women cannot act a lead role and be powerful by themselves. That is often preached by media standards.
Yeah, and it's...
Especially when Marvel and Disney are always like, yeah, diversity, look at all these great characters.
Well, it seems like the fans are the ones that, like, latched on to Peggy. It's like, we want more, give us more. And Marvel's like, all right, let's do a 6-episode mini arc. And that's the first season. And everyone's like, yeah, give us more. And I don't see them being committed to their own material. I mean, I feel like Most Wanted and Peggy Carter would have been great little Netflix things, even though they're not the same tone as what all the Defenders stuff is.
Right.
And
or even Jessica Jones,
which is also part of the Defenders property. Mm-hmm. So it's like, if you just keep bringing it, just keep giving fans stuff, there will be people that watch it. I understand they may not be making any money because there are no Agent Carter toys out there for children to buy.
Aside from pop figures.
Yeah, but, you know, there's a loyal fan base that, you know, every convention I see, like, 30,000 Peggy Carters. And, you know, it's something that these fans really enjoy. And I just keep going Marvel. Just let them have something they can.
And I think people are, or at least people have hope for or at least calling to Netflix, is they've brought back low rating shows before, so especially something along this line, like, it could do really well on Netflix with, because I think that's just a shift in the whole, like, how media is being distributed. Like, you see all these Netflix and, like, just Hulu and all those types of shows just do really well because it's all available at once.
And that's what we just talked about. It's like, yeah, I'll probably catch the show that's on Netflix, or I'll probably do this. You know,
right.
A lot of people don't have cable television anymore, so it's hard for them to reconcile, like, yeah, I really want to watch this show, but I'm going to have to wait 6 months to actually watch it, or I guess I can stream it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they went to a model where they can... Okay, let's film the entire series. We release an episode weekly on Netflix, or we do the Hulu model of they release an episode weekly. I'm sure there will be more fans that latch onto the show. I mean, I personally do not watch anything on cable television anymore other than the stuff on CW.
Right. Like, I'm almost considering just going to full streaming at this point, because literally everything is available the next day or even, like, just a couple hours after. Like, this is just completely just not comic-related at all, but I was watching The Amazing Race this season. I guess there were some people I knew on there. Well, not personally, but knew of on there that I really wanted to see how they do. So I never wanted to watch it because it was always at this weird time on Friday night. So I just always watch it the next day on the next morning.
Yeah.
And it was perfect. Like, yeah, it still felt like, okay, I'm still watching this live, but it's at my own convenience. Which I think is what I think companies just need to see, that is people want the convenience of watching it when they can, or binging it all at once.
Yeah, well, and Netflix is starting to kind of go to the Hulu format with their new Chelsea whatever show.
Oh, Chelsea.
They're releasing an episode every Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Like, so they're not just doing, all right, here's all the episodes at once. We're going to kind of stagger them out. And I feel like they could do that with, like, their own properties.
We're fixing all of your problems, Marvel.
Cough, cough.
Please be one of the 20 people that listen to this show. We're helping
forward
you.
Forward this to your execs.
Well, and it's unfortunate because, like you said, they're not potentially making that much money off of it. And it's the same thing with, you know, everyone's favorite show, Young Justice.
Yep.
The whole reason it got canned after two seasons is because the toys weren't selling. It was all a merchandising thing. So, like, all right, we're not making money. Bandai just pulled their funding from them. Show went down.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't help that the video game came out 3 months after the show ended. And it's like, I was one of those people. This is right around the time I started collecting comic books. I had no idea there was an entire comic series.
Yeah.
And then I'm on Reddit one day, and it's like, yeah, Young Justice Invasion comic. I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah. Or for me, it took me months to get a copy of Volume 3 because it sold out online. There was no other available copies. I had to wait for it to, like, the price to go down for before I felt reasonable enough to buy it. Like, even though I think I'd read it from you at one point.
Yeah.
But it's like, I wanted my own copy, and it was just impossible to get it. It's like, does that say nothing to about how great this was?
But no one bought the toys.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate with some of these shows where they were solely created to maybe make a toy line or make some marketing line of some sort, and it just didn't sell well, so they're like, all right, we're just done with this show now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, you know.
Didn't we make the joke on last week of how Young Justice and all these shows are going to be like the new Firefly?
Yeah.
In like 5 years.
You remember back in the day?
Even 5 years.
Now. Yeah, right now.
Right now. The uproar for Young Justice is...
What happened to Jason Todd 2016? Even the only confirmation of anything in the future happening, I remember Greg Weisman saying at a DCC panel, it's like, yeah, Supergirl was actually going to be in season 3. And it's like, well, there's... And I understand that's why he doesn't tell anyone anything about the
future
stuff.
Because then we're just like, why?
Like, we want to see it.
Why?
Yeah. And it's just really unfortunate.
It is. Especially when just like every single day or week, I almost see just people trying to get Netflix to notice it.
Yeah, Netflix to notice this show.
Even though they've said that, yeah, we're gonna see if we can get it. And it's been like 4 months.
I feel like
that's
the control V response.
Yeah.
Another person asking, that's a file 102, control C, control
V. I feel like Netflix is about to go down the George R. R. Martin path. Like, if you keep asking for it,
I'm just going to extend it.
We're going to kill people.
I'm just going to extend it. I mean, it wouldn't be the first time Young Justice has killed people.
In memoriam to Jason Todd. We've never seen you on screen.
Molly. Just in a hologram.
Sorry for 3-year-old spoilers at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Man. Yeah. Netflix.
Please, just make everything.
See, I feel like at some point there needs to be this very large collaboration between companies that's like, all right, we're going to create a streaming service for comic book properties. Because, I mean...
Or just original properties.
Yeah, I feel like CW is actually going to pull off Netflix soon because they're starting to run their CW app.
Here's my problem with the CW app. It's at least what I experienced on my phone and on the Xbox One, there's no episode listings. There's just, like, trailers and stuff. I couldn't actually watch any of the episodes.
Yeah, and what I found, like, even on the computer, it's not that great because I'll watch a show, it'll go through the ads, and then freeze, and then I have to restart it.
Bad
it'll
same
play
problem.
Those same three ads again.
And it just crashed.
It'll either crash or freeze. And
were you watching it on Crunchyroll? That's what happens to me. That's why I only watch 2 anime a year.
You can't actually, you physically can't
actually
watch
more.
Oh. So keeping going with that whole Netflix thing, there were details about Jessica Jones season 2 and how the show creator, Melissa Rosenberg, that's right? I think that's her name. How it's going to delve more into Jessica's decision to kill Kilgrave at the very end there and dive into her PTSD more. And then also there's going to be alternate storylines for all the side characters. So maybe we will get a Hellcat storyline.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah, maybe, you know, it'll be her thing. Like, all right, I need to help Jessica out. She's dealing with some shit right now.
Or she goes on her own thing and Jessica finds out. It's like, what?
Jessica's been missing for 2 weeks. We need to find her. And Patsy's like, I got it.
Meow.
You rang?
I had this costume made and everything. Jessica wouldn't wear it, so
it's my
turn.
You're wearing a yellow jumpsuit with a cat mask.
And your point?
Daredevil has a better costume than you. Meow.
Now, are we talking season one Daredevil? Or where he just kind of put a bandana around his eyes and called it a day?
Yep.
How could he even see? Can you see that one coming, guys?
Oh, so just speaking of Daredevil, this is kind of something interesting I learned surprisingly at work this week about the Daredevil show. I had to go through like accessibility training for like websites and stuff for like disabilities. And apparently the Daredevil show wasn't accessible for blind viewers, which I found like incredibly interesting. Like a show about a blind character just didn't have like the right accessibility stuff for it.
I mean, a lot of it is based around that whole fighting model. So I guess
true. It's just just found it interesting.
The abridged model of Daredevil would be like dialogue, court scene, insert fight scene, dialogue.
There's specific like audio descriptions. It'll be like
fight scene, and then he's listening for things.
Yeah.
Can you see what he's listening for?
But yeah, I just found it funny. It was just like, that's pretty ironic that the blind superhero show blind people can't actually watch it or anything. But just fun, interesting things I learned. And so another thing that we learned this week was just really weird because it was like rumor article, and then like the next day it was like, oh, confirmed article. And the one that was just probably the most shocking was the Darwin Cook news this week. So on like Friday, there was an article that was like, oh yeah, Darwin Cook's been in the hospital. He's battling cancer.
That was on his blog.
Oh, it was on his blog?
Yeah, he was in, his family posted on his blog that he was in essentially what is hospice, fighting an aggressive form of cancer.
And then the next, not even like 24 hours later, he passed away.
Yeah, and I mean, when you're in hospice, I think everyone kind of realizes like, yeah, this is... Hospices. We're doing everything we can for you, but we're not. You're not going
to
make it.
I think it was just shocking to everyone. It's just like it just happened so suddenly.
Yeah.
Which it really sucks because I really liked his artwork, and he's been around the industry for such a long time.
He's a phenomenal writer and artist.
Yeah, I was just reading some of the stuff he worked on. I didn't know he worked on the Batman Beyond animated series.
He worked on every WB animated show other than Justice League. He worked on Batman and Superman and Beyond.
Yeah, and it's just, I grew up on those shows, and that really sucks. Like, and everybody's just like saying that, like, oh, he was such a great artist and such a fundamental, like, comic book creator, like in the last like 20 years.
Well, keep in mind, I mean, a lot of people know him most for like those retro designs that we see him in New Frontier, but he's the person that redesigned Catwoman's costume that's been used since like. The late 2000s to now,
the late 2000s.
That whole cat suit, and you know the legacy of that. You know, it's being used in the Gotham TV show. It's still the costume in the New 52. You know, this guy's done a lot for DC as an industry. You know, with Batman Ego, New Frontier, especially. You know, it was kind of heartbreaking to me just going to sleep last night reading all these tweets, all these posts that are. Specifically for him, in memoriam to him, you know, people reflecting upon memories, like, it's like, man, there's a lot in the world that this dude did at, you know, he was pretty young when he died. He was 54, I think.
53. And, yeah. But yeah, he was super young.
Yeah.
A quote from Ed Brubaker that he tweeted out is, our work together was a highlight of my career, and he helped to make my name in this industry. He's one of the best comic book artists ever.
Yeah, and I think DC actually released their statement today about his death, and it's Dan Didio and everyone else at the company just saying, it's like, yeah, he helped revolutionize a lot of the things, even though he's known for going back and reflecting on a lot of these things. You know, he's a person that understood every single character that he wrote. And, you know, he had plans to come... do some other stuff. I think he actually had like an Image series too he wanted to work on that got announced a year or two ago.
Yeah, I think what was it? And, it was like the Twilight Children.
Yeah.
Oh wait, no, that was a Vertigo miniseries.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's always sad to see someone like that go, and just so young too, like when, especially since like Stan Lee and Frank Miller just like they're still doing stuff at like
Stan Lee's in his late 90s and like, yeah, I'm still kicking good.
Yeah.
Tony Stank.
But yeah, if you if you're listening and you want to help out the Cook family, they've specified that donations can be made to the Canadian Cancer Society and the Hero Initiative. I believe donations can be made in his name, which that's always good to see. Hopefully people want to help out with them, because that's always rough. Like, and just it's always sucks to see like all these comic book people just talk about him. It's just like, man, that like it sucks for like the fans to see someone die, but all the other like artists and people who've worked with him, it just I can't imagine.
And it's not just him, but any artist who, you know, will die that suddenly, it just kind of affects a lot of people. Because, you know, I didn't know he worked on Batman. I didn't know he worked on Superman or Batman Beyond. It's like he introduced a whole generation to superheroes and comic books,
mm-hmm. or at least helped.
Yeah, and that's just it. No more.
Yep. It's just now. Now it's just like time to go like find all his work and just go read through all of it again.
They DC released this year a complete collection of Darwin Cook's art.
Oh yeah, with all the retro covers.
Or not stuff. Not only just the retro covers, but just everything that he worked on. So stuff like Watchmen, stuff like
New Frontier. Oh yeah, he was part of the before Watchmen stuff, even though that didn't do really.
That was
well.
The only one that I actually read because of his name was on it. So, you know, he has just gorgeous artwork. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's one of those people that just, like I said, understood characters, and to the point where he could have written anything for DC and people would have read it.
Yeah. So, you got anything else you want to talk about this week? You see anything?
I'm trying to think.
There's anything else? You, Steven?
What were your guys' thought about the Kevin Smith episode of The Flash?
I've actually not watched it yet.
You have not?
No.
I watched it.
I'm super behind as well.
I thought he did a fantastic job with it.
Yeah.
Brought some great emotion into it. And then introduced a very interesting aspect with the Speed Force.
Yeah.
Cosmic Dreadmill? Please?
No, still damn no Cosmic Treadmill.
Damn it!
It was a lot of high-fiving going on in that episode. But it's actually, you know, Kevin Smith is another one of those dudes that's like, you know, he understands characters from a director's angle. He
built his life around this stuff.
Yeah, and he did a phenomenal job directing that episode of The Flash. You know, all the other actors came out and said, it's like, yeah, he really wanted us to be what we understood the characters were. He kind of let us do different takes, different interpretations, until it felt right for a scene. And Berlanti came out. It's like, yeah, Kevin Smith's actually going to come back next season, too, to do an episode. Nice. And he's like, I want the Zach Stentz episode.
Yeah.
That's the one that I want to direct, because he does some phenomenal work. But yeah, no, they recreated how far behind are you?
I'm like, I think I'm only like an episode or two behind.
So they recreated the explosion.
Right.
Barry disappeared from existence.
Oh, he just got like just absorbed. Poof. So he got wallied.
Well, he was in the machine to recreate the explosion.
Right.
And then after that, his suit's just lying there, and they're like,
oh,
he's gone.
Yeah. And
so he just like became the Speed Force.
Yeah. And then Wally and Jesse also get hit by the explosion.
Called
like
it.
Was saying.
Called it.
Yeah, it's kind of to be expected, and Jesse's like in a coma. So when Barry comes back, he touches her and just transfers part of the Speed Force into her. Mm. So, you know, again, I feel like the CW's interpretation of Barry is part Barry Allen, part Wally West, because that was part of Wally's powers in the comics, where he has full control of the Speed Force. Wally does not have a costume. He constructs his costume out of the Speed Force.
Oh.
Rather than shooting it out of a ring. Yeah. You know, and then Wally also has the power to take the Speed Force from people without a machine or anything. And he did that after the death of Bart Allen at the end of one of the Rogue Wars. Okay. But, you know, it harkens back to Barry's original thing, like, he was the one that originally got absorbed in the Speed Force, and same with Wally, you know, they both disappeared in the comics, and it's always this one person's voice that anchors them.
Right.
Because, again, the interpretation of the Speed Force is very much heaven, this, there, you can run forever and be happy, but it's like, it wants you, it captures you, it entices you mm-hmm. to the point where you don't want to come back.
Yeah,
and so it's kind of playing on how Zoom's like, how he just always wants more.
And they kind of played on that too, where it was like, you can go back right now. Like, there's an opportunity standing right there. You can go back, but you lose the Speed Force forever. And they're like, all right, I can't really leave when you put it that way. So it does entice you into it.
So wait, he gets absorbed in the Speed Force, and they say, oh, you can't go back, otherwise you'll lose your powers.
He just breaks
again?
The rules.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Classic
Barry.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, it's a cool lead-up to what's going to be, like, the Flash comic soon, where everyone
all these
becomes
other
a speedster,
yeah.
And it's up to Barry and Wally to train people. Like I said, I was trying to figure out my Rebirth pull list, and I'm like, mm-hmm. Do I really want to read this without reading anything else from Flash in a while?
I don't know if you need to, necessarily.
I have Wikipedia. I mean,
yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
That's DC how I learned Wikia. About almost everything yeah. about the Green Arrow that I know. Wikipedia.
There you go.
It's like, I like this guy. I'm gonna do
oh,
some
dude,
research.
Speaking of that, did you see Gene Yuen Yang? Is that how you say it? Something
yeah,
like that?
Close.
Yang. He's creating pretty much a Chinese Justice League.
Yeah, that was part of the preview for
Yeah, yeah, that's what I was talking about. Yeah, you see Chinese Batman and Chinese Wonder Woman.
Yeah, it's, with, I'm really excited
Kenji.
For that
reason. I think I'll probably pick up at least the first issue now.
Yeah, digging into Comicverse with the death of Superman now, or second death, third yeah. death, whatever you want to count it. The two Supermen, both post the New 52 Superman and the pre-Flashpoint Superman, finally met.
Yeah, how was that?
It was interesting. The solicits made it a bigger deal than it was, because you have this energy being who has been capturing the essence of Clark Kent.
Mm-hmm.
In Superman, that he kidnaps Lois essentially and says, I want to show you something. And he takes them to the White's, Clark and Lois White's cabin in the middle of the forest in Kansas. And they're like, this is what I wanted to show you. And mm-hmm. then John is sitting there. It's like, Mom, why does that lady look just like you? And why does that guy kind of look like Dad? And Clark Kent's like, God, this is so hard.
Clark Kent 52.
New 52 Clark find the energy ping and they land down there just as pre-Flashpoint Clark and energy being Superman kind of stare each other down. And then the older, more rugged, bearded, awesome pre-Flashpoint Clark Kent turns to New 52 Clark Kent, and I'm saying Clark Kent way too much, and it's like, there's a lot to explain, but not right now. And then they take off, and this energy being Superman is like, I am Superman. I have the memories of Superman. You are an imposter, and you've taken your life from me. So it's kind of weird to see this energy being who has the powers of Superman, who looks like Superman, but he lacks everything the Kent family raised in him. Because he's this super aggressive guy, and you know, all Clark wants is New 52 Clark, all he wants is to make sure the world's a better place when he's gone, and now he has this one final obstacle laying in front of him. I think there's two more issues to this whole storyline before it all ends.
At least one.
Yeah.
Told
so
before Rebirth.
Yeah, Action Comics 52 came out, and I think we still have Superman 52 and
yes.
Superman Wonder Woman left.
Yes, I think
so. Yeah, two more issues, and it's just really interesting because you see a lot of these bonding moments between Clark and Diana, between Clark and Bruce. To one point, they call each other, "Yeah, we're the super friends," and
yes.
You know, Clark's losing his powers and he falls, and Bruce catches him in this plane. It's like, here, let me just do the flying. You rest. And it's like, these are all
I will show you the world.
I really enjoy from these characters. But now it's making me wonder. We know that the pre-New 52 Clark Kent, pre-Flashpoint, all that stuff, he's taking over Action Comics. He's taking over Superman. And we know there's a Clark Kent running around still, so he mm-hmm. probably won't die, hopefully. But
just
who's going to
be
the Superman in Trinity? By Francis Manapal.
Yeah, is it gonna be the pre-Flashpoint or whatnot at this point?
Or is it gonna be its own story?
Yeah, or will it be just a completely new Superman?
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Like how Lois is gonna have her own powers as well.
Yeah.
Can we get a Clark Kent flowchart, please?
Yeah, there's three of them right now, and that's all you need to know. There's one from the original universe, there's one from the New 52, and there's one that's essentially composed of the energy of both of those guys, and he has the memories of both of those Supermen right now. And that's why he knows where to find the White family. That's where he knows to find Lois. That's why he knows that Clark Kent / Superman works at the Daily Planet and knows everyone's name there. It's really interesting, and I really want to know how would this happened, because we have all the Supermen and how Clark is basically being crippled by the events of Rao, by the events of the Dark Side Wars, by the events of shoving himself in a crate of kryptonite. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of things going on and there's a lot of lingering questions, but you know, it's one of those things as a fan is like, I just need to know. I have so many questions. Well,
how does this all work?
Yeah. Other news I could talk about too. Kieran Gillen came out this week and said,
"Oh yeah,
that Darth Vader's ending at 25. That he and his artist sat down together and said, "Okay, where can we go from Vader down?" And he said they realized, you know, we're this close to being done, so we're gonna make this last story our best story.
Mm-hmm. It's already starting off pretty freaking awesome. Yeah. Well, like, there's this excellent line of one of the characters talking to Darth Vader. He's just like, "Yeah, I know you're about to kill me, and it was a pleasure working with you, Anakin." Yeah. Just the fact that he calls him Anakin was just like...
It's the biggest secret.
Boom. Like, he knows all. And
did you, by any chance, read the Star Wars Bloodlines novel?
I have not.
It takes place 6 months before Force Awakens. It's from Princess Leia's point of view. But it explains how the First Order came back, or how the First Order formed. Yeah, and it's political, because everything about Star Wars is politics. There's two sides of the Senate. One side that believes that there needs to be a centralized government controlling everything, and then there's one that harkens back to the old days of...
The Senate.
Of the Senate. And... You know, Leia and Luke are fully aware of their lineage. They know Padme. They know Anakin. Mm-hmm. And then someone from the centralized government comes out and says, "You are the princess. You are the daughter of Darth Vader. You are not the daughter of Anakin Skywalker, war hero, but Darth Vader." So that's still essentially a secret,
right?
And within those 6 months, Luke and Ben, there's no communication from them. Han disappears, and I guess their relationship as a whole is just separated, and that's the way they work best. And then the First Order forms, and it's like, oh man, this is... So everything that's happened, we know, happens 6 months before the actual movie comes out. There's a lot of children running around.
Just don't mind them.
And then, in addition to that Star Wars news, I'm actually really happy that these Star Wars comics are finally moving away from that in-between period of A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back.
Right.
Because there's only so many stories you can tell. I love what's going on with the Rebel jail right now. I love Darth Vader so much. Mm-hmm. But I want to know more universe
things. We need to see more outside of this. Because we know how that story ends in the long run.
And I think in issue 21 or so of the normal Star Wars comic, whatever, it's what happens after Rebel Jail. It's about a squad of stormtroopers now.
Oh, yeah.
Going on
a
mission. And they're essentially new Republic Commandos. Yeah. So I'm really excited for that stuff.
I
fucking
love Republic Commandos, so I might need to at least borrow this from you or get it myself.
Yeah. Trying to think what else I saw this week.
Well, what's kind of interesting is then, what else is Kieran Gillen working on then? Just Wicked and the Divine? Is that the only thing he's doing then?
Yeah, I mean, Phonogram's over for the third time.
Oh, I guess he has his Valiant comic.
Uber and all the other
stuff.
Yeah,
Uber and Mercury Heat.
Yeah.
Which I don't read either of those, but... yeah, it's just kind of interesting. It's like, does this mean Wicked and Divine might get a faster release schedule then?
I think that's what they said, that they're going to do...
I know they're doing
a whole
arc,
and then one special in between each arc now that takes place from the prior pantheon, which I'm really excited for. Because,
that's gonna be awesome.
Yeah, I was rereading issue one the other day with you.
Yeah,
just like looking through your giant hardcover.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I found lots of cool things. I found John had an issue one of first print with the Laura headshot. Since I have the Lucy one, I really wanted it, but it was $20. It's like I just bought $30 more stuff because you told me about the Winter Soldier and Black Widow have a relationship at one point with Brubaker's run, so I went on a hunt for those and I found like the first 5 issues of the Winter Soldier stuff. So now that's like my new hunt is like I want to see this relationship.
Yeah, I'm going back and collecting more Vision stuff. I was talking to you.
Yeah, I started to grab that Xbox too. Got the first 3 issues and then 7, so I'm missing that middle stuff now.
Yeah, so I'm actually going back collecting Young Avengers, Journey into Mystery.
I have a couple of those.
Just stuff with Wiccan and Speed. You know, I'm really interested in that whole aspect in their relationship.
Yeah, you'll get a good Wanda thing of that with Young Avengers.
Yeah,
especially Gillen's run of it.
Yeah, and then Runaways I'm also grabbing right now.
Oh yeah, with who did that? Was it?
It was Hickman, I think.
Yeah, it was Hickman. Yeah, he did I've heard he's really good things from that story.
Yeah,
Runaways that is one of those series I wanted to get back into because I read, I want to assume, the original Runaways.
I want to say Hickman did the first Runaways
series. When it was like a group of children whose parents were a society of villains.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think it's still the plot.
And like, I got the first like 3 trades of those when they were like small little paperbacks. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is amazing. I need to read more of this.
It's just kind of cool. Well, especially now, like they've split off a lot of the characters. Like Nico's in A-Force now. She was a runaway.
Okay.
They're in the new Avengers. And
wasn't Kate Bishop technically a runaway at some point too? No. The first Young Avengers thing, that's when she first came up.
Yeah, they meet the Runaways in Young Avengers.
That's right, yeah. And in Civil War, they...
Yeah. Oh, other news, since we're actually, like, digging deep full into the comic news, they debuted the new Wasp.
Oh, yeah, 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 that was a big one.
All new Avengers 9. All new, all different. A-N-A-D. Yeah. And so everyone's like, oh, who's this new character? She kind of looks like Red Queen, so maybe she's Hope Van Dyne from the MC2 universe or like their interpretation of her. And then the comic opens up with her trying to go to Hank Pym's house and he's not there, so she leaves. And she learns that he got killed.
Yeah, I was going to say, isn't Hank Pym dead?
Yeah, he and Ultron essentially fused together. And I think Hank Pym's actually coming back in Ultimates at some point. I can't remember. There is a tease for him in some comic. But Wasp was the daughter of Hank Pym and like his first love interest way back in whatever. I can't remember the actual comic title.
Storyline.
Yeah, but so mom gets killed. And so Nadia, which is her name, she grew up and is raised in Russia. She grew up in the Red Room. When it's the same place as Natasha. And she says, you know, the only thing that I remember from my time there as a child was a man with a metal arm with a star on it who helped me and took me in. And it's like, okay, so we got Bucky, we got this relationship to Natasha now, and I think that's what sparked our whole thing talking about Bucky.
I was also drinking, so you were just like, this sounds awesome, I want this.
Yeah, so the new Wasp has joined the Avengers, and yeah, it's kind of cool, and it harkens back to some old storylines. You know, they're just doing their best right now to build up this idea of legacy that DC has. Because, I mean, these characters have been the same people for the past 70-some-odd years. You know, there's never been another Iron Man. There's never been another Captain America.
Well, there has.
Okay, Captain America,
there's been 2 now.
But Steve Rogers will always be Captain America.
OG Cap.
But it's kind of cool, you know, DC at least, like, yeah, we have 5 different Robins. We have Dick Grayson as Batman. Mm-hmm. We have Azrael as Batman. Take your pick.
Which interpretation do you like?
Yeah, and I mean, we have a new Quasar.
Oh,
yeah. We have a new Wasp. We have a new Thor. We still have Sam Wilson as Captain America, so at least they're building up legacy.
Yeah. I mean, arguably, you could say that they're trying to build up Captain Marvel's legacy, or they have been since Kelly Sue took it over.
Yeah.
That I feel like that was her like overall mission is like, one, make her relevant, two, make her own legacy, which I feel like they've successfully done at this point.
Yeah.
Since she's such a major character. Or the boss of spaces everybody likes to joke about now.
Mm-hmm. Have you been reading Spider-Woman?
I have, series? Yes.
So
I've liked this aside from the alpha stuff, I've liked the overall storyline. It's been kind of interesting, especially Gwen and Cindy's relationship.
Yeah.
Like, this last issue was, like, it was almost heartbreaking, especially since Gwen's just like, I don't hate you, I'm just disappointed by you. Like, yeah. I don't want to be you.
Yeah, I don't... What me are you talking about? And it's like, well, a little bit of both, Cindy.
Because you hesitated when she presented the offer to you.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you, like, almost can't fault Cindy for that, because Earth 65, her family's still okay.
She's a rookie hero, too, which is really hard to reconcile, because, I mean, Gwen, her first experience as Spider-Woman is Peter Parker dying. And then you have Jessica Drew, who has been at this gig for so long, and now she has a child, and Cindy doesn't have any of those attachments other than, where the hell is my family?
Right. And, like, there was even... I can't remember the exact wording, but it was like, you think hiding in a bunker was easy? And Gwen's like, yes, it was, because you ran from your problems. Which is like, oh, gee, it's like, there's this conflict between the two that I hope gets resolved, because it'd be a really good growth for both of them.
Yeah. And I mean, at this point right now, spoilers for anyone, Gwen doesn't have powers.
Something's like happened where she's like slowly
essentially
losing him.
Earth 65 Cindy Man. See, why can't we do just Earth?
Earth 65. Yeah, timeline. It was Cindy. They called her Cindy 65, which was perfect. Yeah.
So Cindy 65 took Gwen's powers because she was the one who created the spider that bit Gwen. So I mean, it kind of goes against the whole spider totem thing that Dan Slott made with Spider-Verse.
Oh, with the whole web.
Yeah, you're all connected together in this web. You think this chemical accident had given you these powers, but it's actually a magic thing. And Peter's like, no, I got bit by a spider, dude. But it's really hard to reconcile, because Gwen, her powers were her life at that point. Her job as Spider-Woman's to do everything she could in order to redeem herself from the death of Peter Parker.
Right.
And now that she lost him, I think I was reading the solicits, issue 9 of Spider-Gwen is about her coming to terms with the fact that she doesn't have her powers. I mean, this happens to every Spider character anyways.
But at the same time, since Robbie Rodriguez is leaving the series, are they going to call it quits after that?
But here's the thing. The last story arc is the Spider-Gwen arc. So if that might be the way that she
they finalize it,
fixes things, well, gets her powers back in some way. And, you know, the symbiote, I don't know where she's going to get it, because the symbiote feeds on those negative emotions, like the venom that we see.
I mean, it could be like the venom from 616 somehow gets to 65.
No, he's in space.
Oh, that's right. He is Venom Space.
And that's the purified symbiote.
That's true.
Where he can shapeshift and have giant...
And Flash essentially has control over him.
Yeah, he has giant wings when he wants to. Like, he has that much control over the symbiote now that it's been purified from the crap stick that Peter Parker was. Because, again, feeds on emotion. So
right.
Peter, the emotional punching bag of the Marvel Universe, has a lot of... just not necessarily darkness, but he has a lot of negativity in his life.
Yeah, negative things that just happen to him.
Yeah.
Constantly. I'm trying to I had another thing to talk about that, but no, I can't think of it now.
Emotional punching bag.
Yep. Oh, I remember. It's so annoying that they keep calling Gwen Spider-Woman. Like, everybody, we all refer to her Spider-Gwen.
But that's
her
title.
I know. It's so
Look, it's the hero Spider-Gwen. I wonder who she could be.
It's Spider-Woman. It's like, wait, we have two Spider-Women right here. Like,
hey, Gwen, look, it's Spider... Oh.
But they refer to Silk as a Spider-Woman, too. So
but
it's
she
like,
still has her own thing. Silk.
I think it's just like, oh, we had to come up with a new name. Let's just keep it as Spider-Woman. We're not going to have another one in this universe.
Right.
And then crossovers. Again, Edge of Spider-Verse was only supposed to be that one issue until it went into fourth printing.
And then it was all spawned from
that. Yeah, we're going to write a story now.
We'll make a series off of this. Just like Gwenpool.
I keep turning to just look around, and I'm looking at your couch right now, and I just see...
Darth Vader's just sitting open.
I see BT just looking menacingly on the page, like he's just staring into my soul.
Yes, you do want to murder everyone.
I just want a needle in my arm.
How do you, what's the voice that you picture for BT?
Oh, definitely C-3PO.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's kind of what, mine's like a demented C-3PO.
Yeah.
Like, more like high-pitched, like, laughter. Like, oh, ha, 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 ha.
Yeah. Like, either that or,
evil scientist.
HK-47 from, Knights of the Old Republic.
Oh, it's been so long, I can't remember what that sounds like.
Yeah. It's just very aggressive tone. And 000 is just, like, it's a whole other thing.
Yeah.
Steve's just sitting here quietly while we're just rambling. Oh,
didn't you start reading like Sex Criminals and stuff, Steve?
Yeah, I picked up the first trade, read the first couple issues.
Isn't it great?
It's so fantastic. And I opened it up, I was like, all right, I'm gonna, you know, maybe check it out, read the first one, see how it is. And like, oh, look, penetration, first page.
Oh, did you get to the one issue where Susie's friend, like, it's a flashback of her in middle school. It's like,
just going over, explain everything. She's like,
so wait, you don't, like, time doesn't stop for you? It's like, what the fuck are you talking about?
I was dying the whole page. She's explaining, like, this is what this position is. Yeah. And this position. I'm like, oh god, why?
Yeah, I highly recommend the Just the Tips book from those two, because it's just really bad sex tips.
Oh my god.
Like, it's so great. And it's full. It's just, like, in that same style of the book. It's just, like, don't ever actually do these things. Yeah. Like, take these with a grain of salt. These are just, like, for pure humor.
You see what this is? Don't do it. Ever. Yeah. Just ever.
Don't recommend. So, time for picks?
I agree.
Let's do picks.
Steven, start us off. You got anything? It could be anything. Like,
yeah, just
even
anything this time.
Anything that you've read lately.
Read, watched, anything that we haven't talked about, maybe.
Anything I've read or watched you guys already talked about. So I picked up Sex Criminals, I picked up Rat Queens, I picked up Saga. I was going to pick up Wicked and Divine, but I couldn't find an issue. So
it's working.
I got nothing, really.
Nothing you watched?
Nothing, nothing new.
Okay, fair enough. So, did
my
I go?
Your turn.
I think it was your turn.
All right, so this week I read Vision, issue 7, by the magnificent Tom King. God, I just love Tom King's writing. Even the novel that I'm reading, A Once Crowded Sky, right now.
He's becoming such a prolific writer now.
Yeah, he's out there. I mean, like, from his early stages of writing, like, a Godzilla comic book to now. You know, he's using... I just love it. He's just using such wonderful craft. And so this week, Vision harkens back to the entire Vision history. And the cover is Vision being crawled on all over by three different interpretations of Wanda Maximoff. But, you know, one of my favorite things is that since it is a history of the Vision, it goes back from his and Wanda's first date. Him and Wanda making out while the other Avengers are fighting. Him and Wanda having these children. And so the entire aspect of the Vision comic is he wants to start new. He wants to understand human emotion more than he's done before. And he can't do that with all the emotional baggage he's already had. And him reflecting upon those memories is just, like, kind of heartbreaking. Because, I mean, the one scene that I was telling you two last night that really got you interested was Wanda talking to... she's talking to Vision, and Vision's like, Wanda, we have to talk. And Wanda's like, oh, Steve gave us a America blanket, it's a flag. Right now, he said that the kids are a little too young, but I think they'll be fine. And he just stops her. It's like, Wanda, they're not real. And she pauses and just turns on him. It's like, you're not real. You're a goddamn toaster. And
that is the actual line, by the way.
Yeah, and it's just amazing. Like... it harkens back to that first date where he's telling her a joke about two toasters. So that toaster line is just really significant. Okay. And so it just, the emotional impact of everything, you know, Vision's telling her, it's like, they're not real. You need to come to terms with this. And it's like, you're not real. What even are you? You know, to say that these children are not human when you're not even real. And then when Vision's body gets destroyed in the the 90s, he gets like this fancy new silver body. And he straight up tells his two kids, I am not your father. I am not the Vision that you once knew. And I have no emotional attachment to you. And Wanda flips out on him. It's like, you used to be kind. What happened to you? And, you know, there's a lot of these things where Vision's trying really hard to be human. Again, some of my favorite books is just the stupid thing about human condition.
Damn it, Cobb.
You just learn a lot about these characters and how they struggle through everything. So, you know, Tom King and his guest artists that issue do a lot of building upon Vision, building upon his emotions, and they take some really old classic panels from the 60s on, and it's like, okay, if we're gonna re-reference it, we're gonna build this romantic connection between Wanda and Vision, and that's kind of what got me started. I'm like, oh, I want to know more about Speed and Wiccan, and I want to know more about everything that's Wanda and Vision. So, you know, I've been hunting some of that stuff down now, and, you know, between Wikipedia articles and, like, this is the trade that you need if you want to understand this relationship. Mm-hmm. I've been, like, picking apart a lot lately. So Vision's awesome. I'm sad to see it go in 5 issues. Tom King's going exclusive to DC. He's writing Batman, and I just can't wait to get more of what he brings to the table.
Yeah, just the more I read of him, the more I can tell that he's like, he has his groove now. Like, he knows what he wants to do when he writes a book, which is really great to see. So I really need to just start. I just really need to start going first, because you always just blow mine away.
The thing is that we just need to, you go out of your way. It's like, I need to buy this, 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 and this. I'm like, dude, I own it. Why do we borrow because comics all collector. The time, but we borrow comics from each other all the time. Collector. And you're like, yeah, I'm just going to go buy this now. I want it. You text me at like 9 a.m. Hey, do you want to go to this store and this store and this store? I'm like, no, I just, no. All right.
That's how I am. So something I picked up, actually, it's actually from last week, but I've been caught up on a Mockingbird, which is still kind of just like up in the air. Is it limited? Is it not limited? We're not even sure. But it's about Bobby Morse. Kane? Bobby Morse. I almost wanted to say Bobby Kane, but that's the writer, is Chelsea Kane. Bobby Morse is an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. And it's like, it's from, what event was it? I swear she mentioned the event that actually happened, but she was injected with the super serum and some alien serum as well to save her life.
Super soldier serum that saved her life, but right.
Now S.H.I.E.L.D.'s like trying to figure out these residual effects on her, and she's like, she has to go into all these like weekly checkups. But now it seems like the story is going to be like, oh, like the first issue we saw her like getting all these messages of like, oh, you need to come for your weekly checkup at this most inopportune times.
She's essentially dying right now, and they can't figure out why.
But it's now, it seems like she's gonna jump through all these stories of her, like, how did she, like, what was she doing before she went to the S.H.I.E.L.D. hospital? And it's just kind of like funny, like, it's one of those like background, like, oh, this is how S.H.I.E.L.D. actually works in the background that you don't see too often. Like, they have their own medical facilities and stuff. And there's even one scene in the first issue where Black Widow, she's in like some like almost like domination, or not Black Widow, but
Bobby's
in this like dominatrix outfit. And Black Widow just happens to also be in this medical facility, just like in the waiting room.
And they explain like, that. That's issue 2. Boot.
Yeah, issue 2 explains why she's in the dominatrix outfit. And it's just like,
it's the Hellfire Club. She's secretly investigating.
Yeah. And it's funny that she's like, you guys haven't been relevant since the 80s. It's like, oh, that's the Dark Phoenix saga. That's funny. Good reference. It's just a really fun series that just kind of goes more into like what S.H.I.E.L.D., like the, just the background of S.H.I.E.L.D. And this character is like, yeah, I don't want to believe any of what they're saying. And she's just like, when she realizes she has like some sort of power, she's like, well, that's cool.
Everybody's just like, balls.
Yeah, everybody's just like freaking out. It's like, what the hell? And she's just like, well, that's cool.
Bobby, want me to do it again? See the zombies.
It's like, yep, or nope, don't see anything. And there's a freaking white zombie behind the person's shoulder. It's just like, she's in denial of the whole thing, but she realizes what's actually happening.
Yeah.
And she just seems like a really great character, and I want to read more of her.
You should actually read Amazing Spider-Man by Dan Slott, because she is one of the supporting characters for the first 11 issues. She and Peter are doing S.H.I.E.L.D. missions together the entire time. And the best thing, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but talking about Bobby, at the end of issue 11, Bobby's on the ground with Peter, and then one of his former love interests is like, come here, Peter. And they hug. It's like, I bet we can make her jealous. And it's like, I will take a Bobby Morris, Peter Parker ship, please.
Yeah, I dig this. I like it. Yeah, it's a really fun book. I really hope it gets bumped up to an ongoing, but it sounds like it's probably not going to be. But which is kind of sad because it seems like there's a lot of potential with this book and this character, which is just a supporting character in other books right now. But yeah, I think that's going to do it for this episode of the Z2 Podcast. Thanks for coming back, Steven. It's always good to have you again.
He had to lean closer to the mic.
Yeah, he was got comfy. He's in my Enterprise-style chair, like the captain's seat. As always, you can please give us a review on iTunes if you could, or Google Play, wherever you're listening to. Go check us, go follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Z2 Podcast for both of those. And yeah, if you ever have any questions about just what we do, or if you want to suggest something we should talk about, feel free to comment on or send us a message on Facebook or even our WordPress site, z2podcast.wordpress.com. And yeah, I think that's going to do it for this week.
We love you all. Yep. And I hope you have a fantastic week
whenever you're listening to this.
Bye.
Bye, guys.